Stardate 97987.9. Welcome to another live edition of Star Trek Discovery Pod. My name is Mike Moody. With me on the view screen is
Mariah Gossett,
Grant Davis,
Clyde Haynes.
This week we are podcasting again live on YouTube and looking to the future, mainly because that's all we can do since there's no new Star Trek for us to review. But we do have a lot to look forward to. Discovery Season 3 is on the horizon. We think, maybe, toes crossed. Also on the far, far horizon is Star Trek Strange New Worlds, the new Trek series starring Anson Mount, reprising the role of Christopher Pike for a string of new adventures set aboard the Starship Enterprise. And today, we'll be breaking down the character of Captain Pike, sharing our opinions, theorizing about what's to come on Strange New Worlds, and diving into what some of you, our listeners, had to say about everybody's favorite new/old Starship captain.
But before we dive into all this Pike talk, I wanted to just remind everyone listening to make sure you have subscribed to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, if you could leave us a 5-star review, that really helps us out. It brings us up in the charts. And for all the links to Apple, Spotify, YouTube, all the other important things, you can just visit StarTrekPod.co.
But if you've already done that and you're itching to do some more, like you want to give us some of that money that you have in your pocket and you just need to spend money, please go to patreon.com/StarTrekPod, and there you can make a per episode pledge. Give us $2 an episode and you'll gain exclusive access to our private Slack channel where we discuss all things Trek. We got a whole bunch of different channel rooms and in there, and it's a good old time. We're also doing bonus content exclusively for our patrons, those people that are helping us pay the bills and keep this little project afloat, including, I think there's an exclusive series of Badass Ladies of Trek that Mike and Mariah are doing. And I think that you guys are going to somehow drag me into talking about some more of these Trek movies. So we'll get in there. It's as long as we can do those Chris Pine ones.
Mm-hmm.
I think coming up next,
the Kelvinverse.
He can give Anson Mount a run for his money with dreaminess.
Matching jawlines for the win.
Right, for Clyde? Sure. Those jawlines?
Yeah, the jawlines. It's like that rock star captain jawline. And if you happen to be watching us live on YouTube, we would love for you to interact with us. We want to hear from you. So just tag at Star Trek Pod or type POD in the comments if you want us to mention a comment or ask us a question. We're excited to hear from you later on in the show. We'll sort through the chat and see what incredible things you all have to say.
Yep, and just like the past few weeks, we are deviating a little bit from our usual format. We typically review a new episode of Star Trek on the pod. There's no new Star Trek, so if it's your first time joining us, check the back catalog in which we've covered every single episode of Star Trek Discovery and Star Trek Picard. You can find all that at StarTrekPod.co. All right, let's do this. So Pike, Christopher Pike, has been played by 4 actors. First by Jeffrey Hunter and Sean Kenny in the original series. How many is that?
2.
2, okay. And then Bruce Greenwood in the first 2 Kelvinverse movies. How many is that?
3.
All right, 1 more. And then, of course, by Anson Mount in Discovery Season 2. And today we'll
That's 5, right? Did I miss one?
Was that 5?
I might have missed one. I mean, counting to 4.
Who can count that high?
Today we'll be focusing on the Anson Mount portrayal of Pike on Disco Season 2. And kind of maybe forecasting what we're going to see in Strange New Worlds, which comes out in 2029.
Oh, man. I rewatched the Jeffrey Hunter, The Cage, in prep for this. So,
no, that's whoops. Great.
Right.
That's great because, I mean, I was going to do that, but nah.
Oh, okay.
Just nah.
Did anybody else? Well, Grant, you haven't seen any of the original Pike.
No, I've seen Bruce Greenwood in the Kelvin one where he's like, join Starfleet.
Right.
Kirk.
Be like your father. Outdo him, I dare you.
Ride motorcycles.
Have you seen the Jeffrey Hunter or Sean Kenny version of Pike in the original series? Have you seen those episodes?
I didn't even know it was two different dudes. I mean, I've seen some like screenshots. Yeah, I didn't know those two different people.
I have seen at least one of them. I will confess, I did know it was two different dudes, but it has been a long time. Mm-hmm. And Mike, you have that song stuck in my head. You say the words, it's been a long time, and the next thing I know, I can hear you. It's not even, I don't even hear the actual song. I hear Mike singing in my head.
Just
it has been a while.
You're just baiting me into singing it, aren't you?
I'm not. It's been a while since I've seen it. Because when it comes to the original series, I actually like some of the later episodes. Spot just because that's kind of closer to what I watched kind of growing up. So no, I haven't seen it in a long time. I've seen it like once or twice, but I haven't seen it in a long time.
Yeah, well, Jeffrey Hunter plays the Pike that we know from the original series in the cage, and Sean Kenny, I believe, played the beep boop version who's stuck in the beep boop chair. So he's basically he's
the menagerie version. But I like to think the Jeffrey Hunter, the cage, is our original prequel to this Pike, since they did show it right before the memory episode of Discovery.
Yes, indeed. Well, I did rewatch something in preparation for this. I rewatched Brother this week, the season 2 premiere of Discovery, which is also the first appearance of Captain Pike on Discovery. And let's just start there. Like, I was struck by how gracious, empathetic, and transparent Pike is with the Discovery crew right when he meets them. He just hops off that transporter beam, and he shows a lot of humility when he's explaining to Saru that he's there to take over the ship from him. Like, Saru's been captain for like 3 episodes, and all of a sudden, here's Pike taking away the ship. And Saru's like, what the fuck? This is the first I hear of this, Brosif. And Pike says, yeah, I know. Sorry, bro, but that's because I wanted to deliver the news to you in person, because we're homies like that.
I remember all this. You're saying
dialogue
it verbatim.
Is so word for word. Yeah,
written by Alex Kurtzman. I don't know why you're looking at me.
Do you have the script in front of you, Mike? Because, I mean, you're nailing it.
I do. And yeah, that scene is mostly there, like when he hops out the transporter beam and he tells Saru, I'm taking over the ship. The reason you haven't heard about this because I wanted to deliver the news myself to you. I didn't want you to get it over Starfleet email or whatever. And that scene is mostly there to make Pike's introduction more dramatic in the moment, right?
It's also a character mark that he's a very personable person.
Exactly. Yeah. It just doubles. It doubles as a quick shot of characterization for us to really know who this guy is. And
I don't know, Mike. I went back and watched it too. And I watched a number of scenes with Pike throughout Discovery, and I was struck by that scene and the dialogue. I thought it was great. But I got distracted by Connolly from
the jawline.
Not the jawline, but Connolly, because I'm looking at this guy and the way they kind of, it was that Spock fake out. But from that moment, I was thinking, dude, you've got about 20 minutes before you die. Like, I just kind of knew.
Oh, so,
in every scene, every scene he's in there, I'm thinking. So it was distracting. I had to go back and watch it again to really hone in on Pike, because that was a little distracting.
Well, I think, but like, in that scene, I think the writers were trying to convey to us that Pike is a character that we can trust and like. And in the scenes that followed, when he meets Tilly and he meets the entire bridge crew, I think that's really what the writers were trying to tell us as viewers. And I think some of us needed that after watching the betrayal of Lorca. Like, we don't want to see this play out again with a shitty captain and a guy who's just lying to everybody. And right away, they're like, that's not what we're doing. And I remember that, and I warmed up to Pike right away in those scenes. Like, he introduces himself to the crew, and he's basically, yo, I'm the anti-Lorca. And he puts up his personnel file on the view screen for everybody to see. And all that made me immediately like and trust the character upon his introduction. And then we'll get into more of how Pike was portrayed in season two. But what did you all think of Pike's introduction on Disco?
Yeah, I think it made sense from a character's perspective, you know, even from watching The Cage and what little we sort of know about this character within this timeline and this universe, right? It's like the man, the myth, the legend, Pike. And I think we get to see someone who is very hands-on, who has a set of morals and values, but at the end of it all, really just wants to make sure his crew survives and thrives, I think, beyond just that survival mode. Because one of the things that really struck me in my rewatch of The Cage, and what I think plays well into Anson Mount's portrayal in Discovery, is him having this moment where he is really internally conflicted about having crew that's been lost to a big battle scene that was not, you know, seen on screen for any of us. But you can see that emotional turmoil there. And he really wants to be someone that folks can trust and that he can sort of go to bed every night without having to drink too many beverages. And so I think him walking in and saying to Saru, listen, I know if this was my situation, I'd want the person who's coming in to talk to me personally. And so that's why I'm here, to do that for you and to make sure that this crew knows that I'm here for you, not to take over, and to make sure that you survive and thrive as a cast and a crew.
And meanwhile, Saru is like, oh, thank God you're here. Like, I'm in over my head. I'm freaking out about everything. I still have my ganglia. I can't handle this shit.
Yeah, that's pre-ganglia, or pre-losing the ganglia, Saru.
I gotta say, it was everything I wanted from, like, episode one, season one, in a captain, right? Because if you think about it, when we first come into Discovery, we are treated with this, you know, Captain Giorgio, who seems like everything you'd ever want in a captain, right? Captain Giorgio looked like she was going to be kind of Kirk, Jean-Luc, Janeway. Like, we were really kind of going in the same, you know, Sisko, that type of archetype. And in the first episode, she's dead, right? And then we are treated with a new Giorgio, who is anything but those things. And we've got Lorca, who's anything but those things. And finally, we get this captain that is affable and charismatic from day one. And I was a little leery, like, are they going to kill him too? But it was great. Like, I was worried he's only going to be here, what, two episodes? But from that moment he walked in and kind of talked to people, that is what you think of when you think of a Star Trek captain. And I think it was summed up best by what Admiral Cornwell said kind of in her farewell scene. You know, we have to preserve the best that Starfleet has to offer, and that's you. And I think that's what he symbolized from the moment he stepped foot on the Disco. And that's what I felt.
I mean, yeah.
And Grant disagrees. Surprise!
No. I remember when we were watching the first season that you guys all seemed a little bit surprised, I guess, by the darker tone that this Trek show had taken versus other previous iterations, I guess. Mm-hmm. And that there wasn't this kind of central focus, this beacon of hope and optimism that you guys have talked about is always fairly present at the core of Trek. So after a string of these captains who either have died tragically or been manipulative or have been feckless to some degree, maybe, that this guy just walks into the scene and, like, instantly has this warmth and this fatherly figure kind of pride in everyone. He has this respect for everyone from the top down, and you see that in how both Anson Mount and the writing was geared toward to portray this guy. I got what you guys were talking about a lot, where you're like, this is the type of character that we want and we need within this show. Yeah, it was fantastic. I was immediately taken with the guy. Anson Mount has a ton of charm, and how he interacts with every single person makes everyone seem seen and respected on a show where, you know, the first season, it spent a lot of time having background characters be, you know, perfunctory for whatever plot point they needed. But otherwise, they were just kind of background characters. And you start getting a little bit more of a sense of like who these people are when he kind of takes charge and he's there to learn people's names and identify how everything's operating on the ship. And it's like, it's an entry point for us when the first season was just kind of go, go, go between all these crazy events that they were all having to react to. So, yeah. I mean, he was fantastic, and it really brought me into this other sense of space exploration being this aspirational goal and the love of the crew that you guys have talked about, the family. He's Dom Toretto.
There's one thing that I'm not quite feeling that I keep hearing people talk about, and that is this idea of him as a dad figure. I'm struggling with this because he's got way too much like swag to be a dad.
I think you mean daddy.
Yeah, daddy. Maybe. Daddy figure.
I think he's more of like that real cool uncle.
Right? Clyde, you're a dad. You're saying you don't have swagger?
I mean, I don't have swag like I had before I was a dad.
It goes out the window.
I care too much now. But I think he's cool. Like, I think one thing that I see that, honestly, if we're thinking about captains, he's got to be the coolest captain since Kirk.
I mean, he's a little bit more, like, structured and by the book than I think what I've seen of Kirk. Kirk seems like he's aware there is a book, I guess. But it seems like Pike is like, we have a code, we have rules in place, we have this structure, and it is important that we kind of adhere to this because this is the doctrine that makes Starfleet so great, right? And in a way, that does feel a little bit more like an anchor point, a father figure, a dad who is there to make everyone feel stable after so many tumultuous relationships with a captain. So, I mean, I still stand by dad, but I also agree with Mariah saying daddy.
I guess. I think the other thing about, I think the way this character is portrayed in this iteration, I kind of feel like he probably knows he has the swag, but he chooses not to overuse it. Mm-hmm. Like, it's there, the charisma is there, the charm is there. But in watching how he interacts with other characters on Disco and then also in the cage, it's like he knows he could get it, but he chooses not to do it because he's going to do it on his own terms.
I see there's a comment in our live thread that Beta Artemis says, Pike is dad, uncle, big bro, and daddy. And I'm like, there we go.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I can definitely get behind that. And that is, I was going to say something along those lines, because when he first comes in, he does the roll call. Like what you were saying, Grant, he kind of orients a viewer on this ship. He's almost the surrogate for the viewer. He gets on the ship and he learns everybody's name and he says, roll call. He goes on the bridge, says, roll call. Everybody give me your name. I don't care about your rank. Just tell me what you do. And he does that. And then he makes them all feel safe. And right before that, there's all this kind of nervous sexual tension with Tilly, who immediately has a crush on him.
Just sweating him. She's the surrogate for a lot of this audience.
Real bad.
Who are also sweating this guy.
In his introduction, we get all that. We get the father figure thing. And he comes to Saru like a leader, but also like a brother. He's like, I respect what you're doing as a leader of this ship, but I have to take it over now. But he even says, there's even a reference to them kind of co-parenting the ship, which he tells Burnham that they're doing. Yeah. And then of course the whole sweating it with Tilly thing. So yeah, this man is everything you want him to be. But is Pike, I was thinking about this, is Pike too much of a throwback for the Star Trek of now? Because he's very much a throwback character. Like in Disco, he's presented as this tall, charming, handsome, white male specimen, right? He's the ideal of a Starfleet officer that we would see on TV circa 1966. And I feel that that kind of feels a little more regressive today. You know, part of what made the character, part of what made Discovery feel great and fresh to me was that we had such a variety of people on the show and variety of characters, and there was lots of diversity and representation. And I was a little afraid that bringing the straight white male captain in to be the leader was some kind of
undercutting progress in a way, kind of thing.
Yeah, and kind of not a good idea of a course correction, maybe for the writing staff. But the way they leaned into it, into that perfect officer characterization, made it work for me. Like, it wasn't a false persona. The show didn't really try to subvert who he was. They portrayed this good man character. Like, he really did strive to embody the ideals of Starfleet in every part of himself. And the show made that interesting by dramatizing his struggle to stick to those values. So not only did we get the guy who embodies everything that Starfleet and the Federation is about, but we also got to see the struggle of him trying to embody those things while under duress all the time. Like, they gave him the sense of depth. And I think just as like, because, you know, we're used to the anti-hero, but that trope has started to feel really stale on TV the past couple years. And then along comes this modern spin on this retro good man character. And it was the perfect time for it, I think. We've done Breaking Bad, we've done The Sopranos, we did Dexter, and presenting this good guy character now and telling the story about his struggles and his sacrifices to remain a good man, I think that was a great call. The whole season was a great story for Pike. And it just underlined for me how important, because he tried so hard to embody and to stick to those aspirational Star Trek values, you know, and that was presented in the character. And it just kind of underlined how important those values are to the franchise for me. But yeah. Do you guys agree?
I think they did a good job on Discovery of making sure he still never became our main character. Mm. And I think that was a nice way to nod that, yes, we're bringing this person in, I think, as a way to calm the waters and say, like, hey, we're going to give you a good captain for a whole season. Like, let's see how this crew really functions with a cognizant, trustworthy captain at the helm. And we'll find Mike eventually. And I'm just going to keep going.
Sure.
But I think I really enjoyed that they didn't make him the main character. So going into this new show, I'm hoping they use it as an opportunity to really continue to expand and build a large ensemble cast, because we are going to have Rebecca Romijn as number one. We are going to have our young Spock. And I think the opportunity there, and it's obviously already rewritten this character, because in The Cage, he makes a remark about how he's not used to women on the bridge yet. Except for you, number one, because you're different, which is that whole, like, you're like a man's chick. Don't worry about it, number one.
Yeah, it's funny. When I watch that, I cannot see the Anson Mount version of Pike ever saying anything like that.
It was mirror version. That's what we're going to find out.
So they've obviously retooled the character to fit into what is current day and age, like, normalcies. And I think the character at that time also fit current day and age normalcies. And so I'm hoping that we get to see Pike be this sort of vehicle for this great large ensemble crew that will get like additional characters, we'll get some fun side stories in the same way we sort of started to develop later in season two of Disco, and just have him continue to be this anchored character, but less the star of every episode.
I mean, yeah, kind of going back to what Mike was saying, I think that's why it was so well done what they did in the second season of Discovery in incorporating him, because, you know, a lot of loyal Trek watchers, they're coming into this show with a lot of baggage. There's a lot of expectations for all of the characters for the show, for how it plays out, for how it treats the world that's already been established and the mythos and all that. But also, I mean, there's a lot of, like, you're able to also play off of that because there's familiarity with certain characters that you can use as a degree of, as a sort of, a shorthand or like a cheat code to set the audience at ease. I mean, we were already discussing, like, you know, the Discovery crew had gone through cycles of poor management, or, you know, feeling betrayed and insecure about their leadership, and they needed something stable for a little bit, but they also don't need someone who's just going to completely overtake their lead actors in the show. I mean, it still needs to be Michael Burnham's show, right? So bringing in Captain Pike was a pretty brilliant call because everyone's already familiar with this guy, mm-hmm. but also knows he is genuinely there just for a temporary gig. Mm-hmm. He's not going to overtake the show, or else they would have to retcon a lot of things, get rid of that ship, have everyone move to the Enterprise or something crazy kind of like that. But they've already established the namesake of the show being the ship, right? So
right.
I thought it was like a really good call, kind of incorporating him into there and everyone having that familiarity with that character. And sure, he's the handsome white tall dude or whatever, but at the same time he's not overstaying his welcome. He's lifting everyone else in the cast up as he stays there, which is, I think, pretty important and substantial. And when he leaves the show, and when he leaves the ship, but also when he leaves the show, there's such an adoration for the portrayal of that character that he gets his own spinoff, which, I mean, that's just such a great way to develop that character and bring it to an audience to the point where they're like, yeah, we want more of him. Give us more of that guy.
Yeah, I thought it was artfully done because, mm-hmm. Mike, to your point, it wasn't a trope of we're going to have a handsome, tall, all-powerful white male. What it was a bit of a do-over, right? And so you have this incredibly diverse cast, right? The Bridge crew is, not only is it multicultural, multi-ethnic, it's multi-species, right? Multi-generational, it's multi-everything. And in the center of it, you don't have this domineering figure, but you've got more of this mentoring, ruddering kind of coaching figure, right? He's not the domineering captain as much as he is the coaching captain. How do I bring everybody up and put people in the right places? And it gave me a sense of, if we go back and look at the 70s, we had some screwed up kind of ideals on what a captain should look like, what a crew should look like. In the 60s. And here's how we behave. And the writers had an opportunity to basically come in and take this character who said some fairly caveman-like things and rewrite it. And they did such a great job, to your point, Grant, that now we're saying we want more. And we're saying, what would happen if you took that was commonplace and seen, you know, ridiculously seen as okay at the time, and then brought it into a place where now that we understand the errors of our ways and let's do it right. That's exciting, and that's a character that I can kind of root for and stand behind.
Yeah, to the point of the character being so popular that he gets his own spinoff, there were a lot of articles, obviously, last week when the spinoff was announced, and the one I found interesting was You guys know Deadline, deadline.com. They wrote about the Strange New Worlds series premiering soon. And their take on it, you could tell it was someone who was not into Star Trek or hadn't seen any of the Discovery show who wrote this. Because the main photo, it was Grant, the main photo and the headline and the emphasis of the article was that Spock was coming back and fans are excited about Spock. But we're really excited about Anson Mount. I mean, Ethan Peck as Spock is fantastic and pretty fun. And I can't wait to see what he does as his young version of Spock without all of his beardy madness that we saw in Discovery Season 2. I think the fandom is really here for Anson Mount. And
yes.
Anson Mount and Pike is what got this show sold and made.
Mike, yeah. How many versions of Spock have we seen at this point? Right?
Three.
You've killed Spock. Yeah. You've brought him back. We've got young Spock.
We've also watched him go through adolescence.
Right.
Finger banging Spock. We saw.
Oh, no.
Oh, wow.
Part three.
I mean, I'm with you. It's Spock is interesting and is a incredible character.
Put your hand down, Mike.
Yes, please. But Pike is something
you're
new.
You're below me on my screen and I don't like it.
Wow, it got weird in here.
Keep going, Clyde.
If you're listening, just ignore some of those things and we'll keep going. No, I think that if you're talking about new and if you're talking about stories and we all love new stories and things that I haven't been told, that's where Pike is. It's almost like they teased us 50 years ago, right? And now they're coming back to actually tell that story.
Yeah, it's so cool that they, you know, there was this kind of regressive character back in the day, but now he's like the most progressive white guy on TV. It's fantastic. Yeah. There's so many cool things about Pike. Like, he sees the best in everyone. That is immediately clear. He's a leader, but he accepts and values everybody's opinion, no matter their rank. That is explicit throughout all of Disco Season 2. He accepts and celebrates what makes someone different and unique. He's always doing that. And I think to the point that Anson Mount said in a number of interviews before Season 2 premiered, and what a lot of people picked up on is that this is Sonequa Martin-Green's show for the most part. It's an ensemble show, but she's a lead. And Anson Mount, in all his interviews, was clear on that. Like, this is her show. I'm here to support her. And ultimately, one of the greatest things that Pike does in Season 2 is encourage Michael and help her trust herself. And he lifts her up. And he does the same thing for Saru and the same thing for Tilly and in smaller ways for the rest of the bridge crew. He's just that guy who believes in people and wants to lift you up. And I think we're going to see a lot of that positivity in Strange New Worlds.
He's a great manager, you know? Mm.
He's the anti-Michael Scott. He's the anti-Lorca and the anti-Michael Scott.
For sure. I'm also really excited to see him and Rebecca Romijn as number one really get into lots of fun, you know, problems of the day and solving them. Because, you know, going back to even in the cage when Pike is captured, it's really number one who figures out a way to get him out and is constantly at the lead of figuring out how to solve this big problem. And you know, at the time, I think, you know, we really just got that one episode with her in the original series. And now we've seen her a few more times peppered in throughout Discovery. But I think the casting was so smart. I think her portrayal is really great. And I'm really excited to see that chemistry on screen.
Again, too, their characterization or their friendship it reminds me of Kirk and Spock. Mm-hmm. It's really that close. And he trusts her implicitly.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Yeah. No, I'm just saying he trusts her implicitly, and that is a carryover from the cage, which if you read the history of Star Trek, when the network wanted that original pilot retooled, one of the issues they had was, we really don't want a woman running the ship when the captain's away.
Idiots.
So they got rid of that character. And that sucks. But we're going to get that now, which is great.
Yeah, I was just kind of curious. Like, do you guys think that they cast Rebecca Romijn in anticipation that there was a good chance there would be a spinoff?
I mean, I would have to say she has to be another one of the reasons that this is carrying over, because she is a pretty big name cast get for such a, you know, quote unquote, smaller role on Discovery. And so I feel like they are setting up all of the pieces and are like, let's see how the audience reacts. Obviously, we all loved it. And so I think it just really strengthened them pitching to the network. Like, hey, like, this is going to be a great crew. The fans love it. Let's bring it back. Let's tell the story of this crew that didn't get to be told on the actual original series.
CBS was just like, oh, another Star Trek show? Sure. Let's add to the other ones we started.
Hey, did Headgear die? I can't remember. You know what I'm talking
Headgear?
About.
I don't think so.
You know what I'm talking
Daft
about.
Punk. Yeah. Daft Punk on the bridge.
Are you talking about the lady who was the security officer?
Yes.
Oh, Non. You're talking about Non.
Yes.
No, Non's still around.
Yeah, okay. Non went to the future with them, didn't she? Mm-hmm.
Did she go to the future? Okay, I couldn't remember if she went to the future or she's back on the Enterprise. Because
she was a security officer on Enterprise. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
I do remember she was on the Discovery during the final battle, so I'm not sure.
Hey, it's possible they kept it vague enough.
Chat, let us know. Is Non going to be in the future with Discovery? I would like to see her. I think that'd be cool.
I bring it up because I think that from the moment they introduced the Enterprise crew, we were all hooked. Like, they absolutely picked a group of characters. So between Spock, between Number One, and between Pike, that if they ever wanted to do a spinoff, I mean, that's how you do it. You don't just have like a couple random characters that you go, all right, well, maybe the writing will be so good, or the material, you know, the franchise.
31.
Well,
sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, they learned their lesson from Section 31, clearly.
Mike is being gross again.
Okay. I just look and think that this time around, they set it up so that it was so compelling that even if that wasn't their original plan, they knew that the fan support was going to be so great that they were almost going to be forced into do it.
I mean, generally with the casting of anyone, like if they have a bit of a more named part with like more lines, I think a lot of times they'll be like, and in the event that there's a spinoff, we'll sign you into the contract for that potentiality with a renegotiation, but you are expressing that you would be interested in such and such, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure Rebecca Romijn was like, yeah, there's a good chance. I see the buzz around Anson Mount here. Mm-hmm. All right.
And Grant, are you saying that you're no longer interested in a Section 31 spinoff? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, I don't remember being interested in the first place. I mean, I feel like that show needs to win me over. And when are we doing our Ash Tyler episode?
Yeah, let me know. I'll be on vacation for that one.
It's funny that Strange New Worlds, which was just a rumor, got the green light, the official green light, and a big media blitz before we've heard anything really official about the Section 31 show. Section 31 has never really been on the docket. It's always been, yeah, that's what we want to do. But Georgiou's in the future with Discovery, the only other characters we've been introduced to really to anchor the Section 31 show are Ash Tyler and
that dude who died.
That dude who merged with Control and died. And we definitely don't really want to see those guys anymore.
No.
So I'm wondering if that Section 31 show will actually ever happen.
Well, if
it doesn't, that's fine.
Go ahead, Mariah.
I was going to say they've selected showrunners for it, so I do believe it's in development.
Oh, really? Which
is when there is time to work out all these things. And I think the concept is strong, and I think we can, you know, I'm interested in like the KGB version of Starfleet Star Trek. I think it'd be something kind of cool and interesting to explore. It's something that I think you get some tinglings of even from the original series movies, when there's the whole subplot to not do the deal with the Klingons and to like take them down. So it's like, if that's, if I was in that writer's room, and again, pitching myself, I would use that as the origins of Section 31. And that's how it begins, is this sort of like underlying dark web. And then we see it all the way through into Picard when we have all these issues with the Romulans.
Yeah, I tend to think that your concept and premise has to be incredible, or the character has to be super compelling. So when I thought that maybe... 31? Yeah, so for Section 31, when I thought that it was going to be a Giorgio-driven show with a little bit of Ash Tyler thrown in, I was really curious. And I was thinking, oh, let's see who else they bring a part of this ensemble. But currently, Giorgio's in the future with Disco, so I'm out on Section 31 right now. I'm like, I mean, if they do it, I'll pod with you guys because I, you know, like you guys, but I'm kind of out on the show.
How dare you? Get out. You're out now. Just kick him, Mike. Get rid of him.
Yeah, you're gone. No, I'm afraid to mess with this thing. So let's get back to Pike. I wouldn't mind seeing Section 31 show up on Strange New Worlds, and because I want to see Pike challenged, right? That's what we want to see in Strange New Worlds. I want to see him challenged. It's going to be a slippery slope with this show. Like, I don't necessarily want Pike to break bad. I don't want to see that, but I want him to be forced to be more reflective of his chosen path and how he leads his crew. I want him to be like challenged externally and internally. How that will materialize on screen in this new show, I don't know. Hopefully without a ton of time travel or trips to the mirror universe, but we'll see. What do you guys want from Pike in this new show?
Well, Mike, one thing I'm curious about, you know, since we've praised the virtues of Captain Christopher Pike here quite a bit, but if this is a character without particular flaws, it might get a little bit tiring just seeing, you know, the last Boy Scout, as it were. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can see what the flaws were with, you know, Captain Kirk. He's hot-headed. He's impetuous. He's a rule breaker.
He likes the women.
And he's a womanizer. Yeah. Like he's a flawed character, which makes him interesting. What we've seen a lot with Pike is that he is a calm, respected and respectable person who treats everyone with dignity and always acts in the best interests of the ideals of Starfleet. But I'm wondering, what are his negatives to you guys?
I don't know if we saw it as much on Disco, but I'm hoping they explore it more. Is his
blatant misogyny?
No, not that part. But he had this really big internal conflict at the top of the pilot episode about if he even wanted to be in Starfleet anymore, if he was ready to retire, because he was upset at how this big battle took place. And so if he's sad about losing crew, loss of life, and all of these things, and this is starting to take a mental toll on him, I think it's going to be interesting to see how that mental toll plays out across all of this, especially now that he's essentially sent an entire ship of people into an unknown future, and he's going to have to mentally deal with that. He also now tentatively knows his own future and has to sort of deal with how he wants his legacy to be upheld. He also is a big fan of horses, so I'd like to see him get a horse.
How is that a flaw? What I remember of Pike, and one of my
Do you know
favorite...
horse people?
Horses are the worst.
Yeah, I've seen those horse people. The thing about Pike, the thing that I remember most about him, or that struck me the most, is that episode in Disco where he's willing to sacrifice his future to preserve the ideals of Starfleet for others and save everyone, when he touches a time crystal and he seals his future and he sees his fate. He sees the fate first. He sees himself in the beep boop wheelchair. And it's like, you're going to end up there and hideously scarred and go through a horrible tragedy. if you take this crystal, but you have to do this to save everyone. And he does it. So I think going forward, it would be interesting to see him on this new show grapple with the idea of knowing his fate. And are we going to see a man who tries to cheat that fate? Will he be tempted to? And will that compromise his morals and his dignity and everything about him? That might be an interesting avenue to go down.
I think also him being an idealist, which you were talking about, that in itself can be a flaw if he's too strident in adhering to these ideals in the face of something more pragmatic that might be necessary and perhaps more of an ultimate good if it's a little bit more nefarious in the present moment. That could be something interesting for him to kind of struggle with and have crew that might feel betrayed by him pushing for how they ought to be rather than being realistic about like what they have to be. Maybe sometimes they have to play dirty for survival. And if he has to be dragged into that by number one or by the more pragmatic approach of an emotionless Spock, that could be kind of an interesting play.
Yeah, I agree with you, Grant. I think his idealism, his rigidness to hold up to this embodiment of what Star Trek is, and now, you know, he's had Cornwell who died for that, is gonna can reinforce that even more. And then I think in this new show, what we can easily see is that ideal, that morality will be tested, right? It'll be tested because what we've seen is, Mike, to your point, he comes onto the bridge, he does this roll call, you know, he's this big hero, this classic hero figure, he wants to save everyone. Well, as we know, Star Trek is all about taking those captains and then forcing them to send people to their death, right? And how does he deal with that? And, you know, now that he knows that he's going to die, and somewhat how, will he be tempted to avoid that or make different decisions? And I can see a situation where in this show, we have this, you know, and I hate it when they do this, but it'll make for good television. They break him down. He has a fall and has to come back up, right? He has to find himself, you know, over the arc of a season.
Do you think they are considering and might want to have him avoid that fate? The scar and disfigurement, they might want to go back in time and save the whales kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, change the future in a way they've changed the past.
I think it's highly possible because it's CBS. And what do we know about CBS? They put shows on forever. So
is it possible for them to split into another reality by doing that? Not just the Kelvinverse versus this main timeline, but like deviate with like what happened if he didn't do that? If Spock stayed with him and Kirk didn't take over the Enterprise, here's a new future timeline in an alternate like reality.
I think if the show earns enough goodwill as it goes along, they'll have to earn a lot of goodwill in order to cash that check and do something like that. Because it just sounds too messy at this point.
Maybe they can show both versions. Like, this is how that happened. But also, what if it happened like this? And then
like,
cue the
like
clue
that show
music.
Awake that nobody watched.
No one.
I mean, we also have the, like, a lot of time before Kirk takes over Enterprise.
It's like 15 years, right?
10.
Yeah, so we've got some time for either way. A good amount of time before we need to use
something
worry
divisible
about it.
By five, Clark.
And even then, I think it would be, you know, if we want to continue down that road, maybe Kirk eventually is cast and we get to see a longer mentorship and then the torch truly passed and then a retooling of the original series, which I wouldn't mind seeing a lot of the original series plot redone with better special effects.
Yeah.
And why not? And better ethics.
Yes. Maybe Uhura would get to take over the ship and be in charge for once instead of just in the animated series.
Maybe Uhura could wear a pantsuit. I'm just saying.
I mean, I'm not mad at the miniskirts. I wouldn't mind. Do you all know there's this like weird transition time when they're trying to get the viewers ready for TNG where men and women were wearing skirts on the Enterprise?
The men wore the skirts in the background. It was interesting.
So bring back the man skirts. I'm here for it.
Why not?
A little breathy. I mean, I might rock one.
Yeah, it's going to be summer down here in Texas.
Right? It's getting hot.
Yeah.
You know?
Buying like a Clyde a skirt on Amazon real quick.
Let's jump into some of these. Our wish list.
Do not do it.
Let's jump into some of these live comments we got.
All right, cool.
All right. So this is a little bit of what we've been talking about. Chupi says, I think Pike has flaws. He's a bit of a Luddite, for one.
Oh, that's right.
I can see number one having to drag him forward a lot. I don't remember him being a Luddite.
He talked about how he liked the old school screens a couple times, and which is their kind of cute way of saying that's why the Enterprise doesn't have the current technology going on. It could be interesting in him wanting to do a lot of processes in a bit of a more tedious, old-fashioned way that other people are like, do you really have to pull out a notebook and write things down or something like that? I mean, that's low stakes conflict primarily, but it could be kind of interesting.
So Beta Artemis said, Pike's flaws showed in his interaction in Disco Season 2 with Ash Tyler. This is why Tyler needs to show up. They have a good conflict and a difference of opinion. They did butt heads a lot, didn't they?
What was
and he didn't conflict? Trust Tyler at all.
I thought it was just in his relationship with Burnham, and Ash Tyler didn't like that Pike was maybe pushing Burnham to probably better herself and like confront things emotionally, whereas Ash was like, no, you gotta protect her emotions or something weird. Was that what it was?
I do remember Pike and Ash Tyler having a bit of an arc where they butt heads a lot and then they come to really respect each other towards the end, but I don't remember the details of it.
Don't you trick guys... us into bringing Ash Tyler back.
Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't mind seeing Ash Tyler back. Ultimately, I didn't like what they did with the character, but when he was first introduced and at the midway point, he was a pretty solid character. I liked him. No comment.
I don't know. I mean,
I'm trying to remember what their conflict was back and forth, but it could just be that Pike also, while seemingly there to trust the whole crew, was not into being trusting Ash Tyler just because of his background and sort of his double, triple, flip-floppy agent lifestyle.
My thoughts on Ash Tyler wasn't necessarily a knock on the actor. I think the actor was put through a lot and did a great job in his performance. I think that they were constantly flip-flopping that character and taking advantage of it to have either a good guy love interest or a nefarious villain, and it wasn't fair. It just seemed like an exercise more than entertainment when I was watching. And so it was a little frustrating when I think back to that arc.
Well, I'm liking what JC has to say. Bring back Prime Lorca to lead Section 31. Hell yes. I'll take Section 31 show with Lorca, or like I said last week, Lorca comes back and at least for a few episodes is Pike's nemesis.
I mean, Jason Isaacs is awesome. So yes.
I do like Jason Isaacs.
What do you think, Mariah? Is this a good way to bring back Lorca, maybe with the Section 31 show?
Is this like with the idea that weird little green dot was him and he can still be alive? Is that what this is?
No. That's Mirrorverse Lorca.
Right?
Yeah. That green dot was actually that girl that was haunting.
Right. Yeah.
What's her name?
May.
Tilly.
Right.
May.
Yeah.
May haunting Tilly.
I think.
Yeah, I think what we're talking about is the original Lorca has never been seen or heard from, so no one knows happened to Prime.
Right. Prime Lorca.
We knew Mirrorverse Lorca, who was a jerk that everybody but me loves, but Prime Lorca, we have no idea where he is or what happened.
Sure. He's probably really psychologically damaged from being like hid somewhere while his mirrorverse self is ruining his reputation.
What else we got, Mikey?
Carolyn K3 says, I'm more interested in a Trek not tormenting the captain. I want him supporting, empowering his crew. I want him to firmly believe in the value of his sacrifices and find strength in that certainty. Yeah, fair point. I do think that...
But occasionally torment the guy. We need
conflict. Grant, you're obviously a much bigger fan of today's style of TV in terms of the prestige dramas and not really so much of the, like TOS original series or 90s Trek.
I bet you guys are too. I think you are. I don't think you want... that old school style of show.
What I'm saying is that I'm more amenable to it because, you know, I was into that stuff. But do you think keeping Pike, not challenging him a lot and keeping him this way, how do you wring good drama out of that?
How would I?
Yeah. Or, I mean, you can't, right?
Well,
I think you can. I think I think a lot about like adult animated shows now, which I think fit this bill a little bit more of characters progress, but you can drop in sort of anywhere and understand the plot line that's moving forward. I think about shows sort of like BoJack or Tuca and Birdie, Rick and Morty, this is the opposite end of the spectrum, but even like South Park, you know, it's like you can jump in and sort of understand what's happening if you have a general knowledge of any of these characters and still enjoy the plot of the day, and it still drives some sort of plot forward. I don't think we're going to get it at that baseline. You know, that's obviously like a very different side of this sort of like entertainment spectrum, but I think it is capable. And we still have procedurals. Like, there's a reason Law and Order and CSI and NCIS are huge successes and still on television. I still get down on a good Law and Order binge.
Hey,
I think the possibility is there.
I could watch CSI Miami right now. But I agree with you. And when you were saying that, Mariah, that's exactly what I was thinking about. Those procedurals, they are, you know, crime of the week. You know, the plot of the week. I could see that and still see some progression, some challenge. It really puts the challenge for the writers on what you do with the away mission that you get for every week, right? Who are the characters, the villains? Because what happens is then Pike and crew become a vehicle for these characters of the week, right? Whoever they're interacting with, and that is providing the conflict. Maybe not so much around Pike, but Pike's response to, you know, what we'd see in TNG is whatever warlord was trying to, you know, manipulate and destroy some other character. And then this challenging against the Starfleet code. Do you intervene? Do you not intervene? There's all these kind of internal things that people were looking at. I think you can still get a lot of that.
I really don't want episodic, though. I mean,
and I think you don't have to have it be episodic. I'm thinking more in lines of like Shondaland like
Justified
shows.
Season one, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I love Justified. Mm-hmm. Season two and on, but that first season, sure, there's like on running storyline, but it's like villain of the week, and it's like almost like a like Murder, She Wrote or
last.
I'm like, sure, I guess Jessica Fletcher is writing that book, but
all of Justified is amazing. Grant, shut your mouth.
That first season is a little tedious.
Well, we have heard from Alex Kurtzman, or maybe it was Akiva himself, that this show will be more episodic than Discovery. However, what does that mean in this day and age? It doesn't mean that it's going to be 90s TNG, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that.
I mean, what you were talking about, Mike, about can Pike not be tormented? And I think, sure. And, you know, Clyde, you do a podcast on a show that's a great template for this. This Is Us. You talk about these shows that I often describe as very saccharine. Yes, but This Is Us, Parenthood, Friday Night Lights was a good example. There's these shows where you can show
crap all over my catalog, huh?
You can show character conflict in a way that isn't tormenting a character so much as you show that, like, we're all individuals and we're all going through our own personal struggles, but we're also a family and a community, and we are there to support each other and build each other up, which it sounds a little bit like that's what Carolyn was even kind of leaning toward as well. And I agree. I think that can make for some very good drama, especially as we're going to see that Christopher Pike's character is going to be struggling emotionally with this idea of fatalism, of his destiny and this fear of it. He's going to be probably fragile at times and need a support system, a group of people that are there for him, that love him and will back his plays. And I think it could be great with that as well. You don't have to have this guy constantly struggling against all of his morals and beliefs and having to compromise on everything.
Well, I agree.
Mike, you said something that I thought was really interesting about this not having to be 90s TNG. You know, 90s TNG was 25 episodes a season, right? What we're probably talking about is like 10, 13 maybe. And I think you can get it really tight. Like, you can have episodic that moves, that can be dramatic without kind of being this just plot of the week and random kind of plodding along, because you're doing half the episodes. So you almost have to move the story along when you think about the overall arch of the season. So I think it can be done without, again, tormenting the captain and using them as the only source of drama.
Let's take one or two more questions or comments. We have Kevin Richardson again. He said, will Pike be a great risk taker because he thinks he can't die because he knows his fate? We saw a little of that in the Disco finale with Cornwell. He knows his fate. His fate is sealed. He knows his end. So is he going to be just like jumping off cliffs and going in zero G without a helmet? What are we going to see here?
I don't think he'll be.
I can't explode.
I would imagine
the vacuum space is nothing to me.
I would imagine he's only really going to be that risky when it involves saving a member of his crew, because I don't think he's someone who's just going to go, I'm going to jump out into space and see what happens, because that would just be stupid. But he definitely would.
Curious now.
Pull another Cornwall, you know. I'm sure it would be like he jumps and someone grabs him at the last minute and pulls him back in. You know, it's like there's ways to sort of write around that.
And one from Choopy. Do you guys think the problem of always needing to save the universe comes out of the highly serialized TV? Your stakes need to be so high.
Your stakes
with
need
separate
not.
Adventures.
Your stakes need not be so high with separate adventures.
Your stakes need not be so high with separate adventures. That's true. I do like shows that focus on, or episodes that focus on, smaller stakes for the characters, more emotional, personal stakes. You know, in a number of the later Trek movies, I'm talking about the TNG Trek movies and the J.J. Abrams Kelvinverse movies, the crux of the movie is always, there's this one villain with a doomsday device who we have to stop, right? And it just doesn't feel personal like a lot of those TOS movies felt. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would definitely want more personal stakes. And if we do have serialized adventures, that might be what we're in for.
We might see this play out a little bit, I think, more like how the Voyager series did, where we got pretty substantial arcs of characters, and there was less, we need to save the universe, because in reality, the whole mission of the show is them to get home. And so if the whole mission of Strange New Worlds is for them to explore new worlds, hopefully then the adventures and the stakes are built to match.
Yeah.
I'm kind of hoping for something that addresses this kind of what's the best term? Colonialist, spreading out of your Starfleet doctrine to these other areas and confronting the appropriate pushback of, you can't just come in here and expect that everyone is going to operate in the same ways with the same value sets that you might be coming from a different area. And like having these more interesting and nuanced discussions of what individuals' worlds, what people's values are, and where we do find consensus there, and where it doesn't mean that everyone necessarily has to be on the same page. That, I think, is right now rife for exploration and discussion in our modern era.
Yeah, I think, you know, the whole idea of, you know, galactic manifest destiny is probably a little bit tired. I think what we're likely looking at is a reflection of whatever's going on right now. This show is prime to deal with a galactic pandemic, right? Like, whatever we're kind of thinking about, what are the things that we're struggling with now, right? Divisiveness.
Oh, I hope we don't have to watch a pandemic.
Oh, it's probably going to happen. It's definitely going
to
happen.
Well, maybe there's just a planet they're going to have to go try to help create a vaccine.
Right. This is escapism. So,
I imagine that
my reality through this show.
We're definitely going to be looking at social distancing and Zoom calls in space. So, I think whatever we're struggling with now, whether that's political, whether that's kind of capitalism and economic issues, I think we'll see some of those things and in a very Star Trek manner show up. It won't be obvious, you know, some of it will be, but I think largely it'll be undercurrents of questioning the things that we're dealing with right now.
Yeah, I think in an episodic nature and going to different planets, you do have a great template to deal with, you know, the social issues of the day every week head on, hopefully in not a really obvious ham-fisted way, but, you know, it's just a great template for that. And speaking about the pandemic, like, Pike, we've been shown that he, at his best, he's an ideal leader, right? And that's something we, at least in the U.S., do not have right now. And that's really apparent during this pandemic. So,
what did you just say?
I'm sorry. I know
I'm sorry, I have something in my mouth. I can't talk.
I know it's a controversial view, but Pike is the kind of leader that brings people together. He acknowledges and celebrates people's differences and sees those differences as strengths that can come together, unlike a leader we've had for a while. I would love to see that.
Insult dear leader.
Sorry.
Dear leader.
Okay, I wanted to leave with one comment here.
Uh-oh.
And if you guys can vamp a bit so I can find it.
Uh-oh.
I noticed that
Pike 2020 is that I think I saw they have some merch in the Star Trek store that says like Kirk Spock 2020, which I was like, who? I don't know. I'd probably flip that. I'd be like Spock Kirk 2020. Thoughts?
Oh man, Kirk would be a great VP. Like,
right?
I'd probably go with Biden and whoever he chooses 2020 just to get rid of Trump.
Yeah. Biden and whoever
hypothetical,
the hell.
I don't even
want to
fuck with fictional people. Like, no joke here.
No Biden.
Just fucking vote for Biden.
No Biden.
I like this comment, Uhura 2020. That is my vibe.
There you go. Okay, here's what I wanted to go out on a positive note. JC says, BVG. I see you explaining stuff like an expert Trekkie. First, BVG? I have to say, JC.
You are BVG.
My name is Mike Moody, not BVG.
Oh, what a positive note.
Nah, Grant. Nah, he's right. You've been getting a lot of love in the comments today. All of us have. And I think it's just because we're so good, you know?
It's great.
That's good.
Yeah.
Cool.
We're fine.
Good on us. We did
good on us.
I like that we all appear in different corners for people because to me, Clyde just pointed, and for the audio listeners, we're all looking at each other on our screens, but obviously we don't come up in the same array for any of us?
Because we all have to be in the same array because it's streaming.
Yeah, there's Mariah, there's Mike, Grant, and there's Clyde.
Grant's
you're at the top. Clyde. We're just all mirrored, and everyone's awful at being able to handle what mirroring means.
No,
so,
we are not good Mirrorverse characters.
No. Though guys, now you got me thinking really about Mirrorverse fun. Clyde. He'd be fun to hang out with.
What?
He would. He wouldn't have a beard.
Would he still be a daddy? You're what?
He'd have more swag than me.
If you want to know more about Mirrorverse Clyde, go to StarTrekPod.co and listen to our back catalog, because we have mentioned Mirrorverse Clyde before, and he's a fun guy.
He's great. Man, I wish he was here. Love you, Clyde.
Thanks, buddy.
Guys, thank you so much for joining us tonight on Star Trek Discovery Pod Live. Remember to visit StarTrekPod.co to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you get your podcasts.
And we will be back next Thursday again at 9 p.m. Central Time. And we're going to have a Star Trek show pitch competition. So as we have seen, CBS All Access wants to greenlight just about any Star Trek show idea they could ever come up with. So we're all going to come up with shows. So we'll bring in some log lines. We'll cast a few of the main characters, give a few plot points that we see our season arc going through. And then we're going to leave it up to y'all on our social media. We'll put up some polls of whose pitch you enjoyed the best. And then I have volunteered to write a few scenes of whichever show gets selected. Holy and we will moly. Do a live read of.
So
this is what happens when you get bored.
Wow.
Yay, pandemic.
I didn't even know about all that. Folks, if you're noticing right now, we're doing the wrap-up of our episode, which means we're about to be over with this episode, and you're going to have free time again to do whatever you want. And I hope what it is that you want to do is to go to patreon.com/StarTrekPod and finally make that per episode donation. I know you've been thinking about it. You're like, maybe I should, but I don't know. Are these guys that good? Yes, we are that good, and we deserve your money. So please go to patreon.com/StarTrekPod. There you can make a per episode pledge. Give us $2 an episode or more. You know, we're not going to prevent you from giving us more money. You can totally do that. That's awesome.
It's fine.
And in exchange, you know, we try to do a lot of exclusive stuff for the patrons. So right now we're doing Badass Women of Star Trek. We're doing reviews of the movies. We have other things in the works. And if those sound interesting to our patrons who are already on the Slack channel, we'll probably go ahead and do those as well. We try to make this a very fun and encouraging and positive environment for all people who love Star Trek, and we would love for you to join us. Once again, that is patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go there. Make the pledge. Do it.
Yes. Do it. And if you want to hang out with us offline, or at least keep up with what's going on, I encourage you, follow us on Twitter and on Instagram. You can follow us at Star Trek Pod. You can tweet about this episode, let people know what's going on, that you enjoyed it, that we were having a good time. And I also just want to give a special shout out to Karen, who runs our Twitter, and James, who runs our Insta. So come hang out with us. We'd love to hear from you.
All right, Clyde, where can we follow you online and hear more from you?
You can find me at Clyde Haynes, and you can also find me on the web at keyandclyde.com. That's K-E-I and Clyde.com.
Grant Davis.
Baron Von Grant, right there. Boop, boop, boop,
boop, boop. Mariah.
I'm at Mariah Gossett. That's Mariah with a Y and a Gossett with two S's and two T's.
Follow me on Twitter at Mike Moody. Live long and prosper.
Bye.
Hit it.
Sometimes you just have to bow to the absurd.